with the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Roadside assistance, auto repair, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com.
Close enough there.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined by Bo Wolf. Phenomenal job there on the read.
Off the top.
And by Fran Duffy as well.
Hey, guys.
Podcast superstar.
I don't go that far.
Yes, yes. Did we have to order you new headphones because your head is getting bigger?
I think these headphones have a little bit of flexibility to them. So.
Superstar Fran Duffy. Right.
Thanks for finding time in your busy schedule.
Thanks for joining us here.
It's going to be a busy week.
Thanks for slumming it with us.
So it is the start of a new year. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy new league year.
That's right.
Free agency is upon us, and with it, a flurry of moves from the Philadelphia Eagles. And we'll start off with arguably the biggest one. LeSean McCoy dealt to the Buffalo Bills for Kiko Alonso. McCoy, the franchise's all-time leading rusher, sent for a very good linebacker who is coming off an injury.
Yes.
Played for Chip Kelly at Oregon, so there's the Oregon ties, the familiarity there.
Correct.
But you pair him alongside Michael Kendricks. You have D'Amico Ryans coming back. You have a very strong inside linebacker group. But just for you guys, the initial reaction, I guess not really initial reaction because it's been reported for some time, but now that it's official, your thoughts on the move?
Well, I will let Fran talk more about what Kiko Alonso brings to the defense and what specific kind of player he is. But in terms of bringing in a very talented player on a rookie contract and sending away a big contract, certainly that makes sense salary cap wise. And listen, I love Shady, and he's so fun to watch, and maybe the most fun to watch player since I've been here. But we talk all the time about running backs and how, especially in this system, it should be easier to find production at the running back position. And I'm sorry to see him go, but the trade makes sense to me. It's a loaded running back class. There's guys in free agency. I think that he is replaceable enough. Maybe not the same kind of player. And we've also talked about, as great as Shady is, he is maybe not the ideal fit for this offense. And that's, you can parse that however you want. That's maybe hand-wringing a little bit. He ran for
1,300 yards last season.
But in terms of resource allocation, I think that money can be spent better elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair point. If you look at the trade just from that perspective, I think you could make sense of the deal, not even counting what you get back in Alonso.
So what are the Eagles getting in Kiko Alonso?
He's a very, very talented linebacker. Obviously, his rookie year, he was nearly the defensive player of the year in terms of the rookies. I think Sheldon Richardson was the player who got it over him for the New York Jets. But Alonso is a guy, I watched all 16 of his games from his rookie season in Buffalo. And, I mean, right from snap to finish, if you look at him, very instinctive player, sees things before they happen, is able to quickly diagnose, whether it's an inside run, outside run, run pass, very little wasted movement from him. His play speed is off the charts, and that's paired with his instincts, his ability to quickly see what's going to happen, and then he's got the athleticism to be able to react and get to the perimeter. He gets down. He's got a really good short area burst, so he can get downhill quickly. Very good tackler. In coverage was one of the areas where I was really, really impressed with. He shows really good instincts in coverage, the ability to play as an underneath zone defender, read the receiver's routes, have a good feel for reading the quarterback's eyes, and taking routes away. He reads screen passes very well. Just a really, really instinctive player, good tackler. You can check all the boxes with Alonso in terms of what you see from him on the field. So the Eagles are getting a very, very good player in return.
Kiko Seaball. Kiko get ball.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's even more than that, too. I mean, it's like, because whenever you see, like, you say something like that, oh, Kiko see ball, Kiko get ball, you almost take the mental side out of it. I think he's a very cerebral player, too. So, very, very impressive player.
What's going to be interesting, as D'Amico Ryans is coming back from the Achilles injury, how will the Eagles pair the inside linebackers this season? Michael Kendricks coming off an outstanding season in his own right, was phenomenal down the stretch of 2014. You have Kiko Alonso coming in, of course, coming off the knee injury, so you have to work him back in slowly. But ACL injuries don't seem to be as devastating as they once were. You have Ryans, who has come back from the Achilles. So we actually have talked about this issue on the podcast, this question of with Chip Kelly overseeing things from a personnel standpoint, how would he want to pair those inside linebackers where the conventional way of thinking would be you have a thumper like D'Amico and a coverage guy like Kendricks. Now, which way will they go? Or maybe Bill Davis, the defensive coordinator, will just have a plethora of options at his disposal.
Well, and also inside linebacker is always one of the positions where you have the most injuries. So that's a position where you need to have depth that you can count on. So it's good. It's a good problem to have.
So we've now talked about a trade. Let's talk about an internal re-signing. Brandon Graham back on a four-year deal. He is going to be the starter at that Predator linebacker position opposite of Connor Barwin. The general thinking was that he was probably going to get a big contract, not maybe as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but as a 4-3 defensive end, and that's what the New York Giants, who reportedly were the finalists for his services, they were approaching him in that fashion. But the Eagles realizing, you know, they've already lost Trent Cole. They released him this offseason. They need someone to step in there, and why go on the outside and get an unknown commodity when you have someone who has been in your system, has made the transition from the 4-3 defensive end to 3-4 outside linebacker, thrived this past season in a reserve role and also on special teams. He's a guy you know. He's a guy you've developed. Why not reward him and let him go be your starter next season?
And my thought with Brandon Graham was always, I would love to have him back, but my guess is that he's going to get overpaid in the market. And this deal is extremely reasonable for both sides. I think sort of the glut of pass rushers probably pushed everybody down a little bit, but having him back for that price is great. You know, obviously we all love Trent Cole, except in the Wolf's Den, but Brandon Graham is younger. He's more of an ascending player than Trent is. He was super productive on a per snap basis last year, not only just in terms of sacks, but pressures, forcing fumbles.
Defending the run as well.
And you know, much better defending the run.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about Brandon Graham to me is, you know, he's come so far in these two seasons in this defense. Chip and those guys always talk about bringing in guys where their projection is less.
Yep.
But Brandon Graham was a 4-3 defensive end. We thought he was maybe the worst, the player who this defense would fit the worst. And all of a sudden he's re-signed to a new contract. Maybe that tells you, maybe makes you rethink a little bit in terms of the kinds of players who you can bring into this defense. Maybe you don't need a guy who played in a 3-4 defense in college. Maybe if you put in the time a year or two, you'll get a player who can be productive in learning this new kind of offense. And obviously that comes down to how well they take to coaching, stuff like that. But he's an interesting case study for this team moving forward, I think.
Yeah, and it's a great point about it. You're trying to mitigate that risk of bringing in new players that don't know the scheme, that the coaching staff is not familiar with. Bringing a guy like Kiko Alonso, who obviously Chip Kelly is very familiar with, bringing back Brandon Graham, who the coaches have worked with over the last 2 years and is the arrow is clearly pointing up with, has improved each and every year. I'm excited to see Brandon Graham back in a full-time role because he's been very productive in the role that he's been given over the past 2 years.
So Brandon Graham is back. So this is the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. So why don't we transition into a little bit of draft talk here.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
Well, since this is the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, it's time to get into a little draft buzz. And on Tuesday, 11 pro days were scheduled to take place, including one on the campus of UCLA. And Eric Kendricks, brother of Michael Kendricks, we've talked about him a lot on the podcast already, not able to run due to a hamstring injury. How do you think it's going to affect his stock moving forward?
I don't think it'll affect his stock. You know, we talked about when we were talking about Kiko Alonso, you talk about the play speed. Kendricks is a guy that, regardless of how he would run in his 40, he's a guy who on tape shows a good amount of play speed because he's an instinctive player. So, you know, you wouldn't want a guy to run in the 4.9s at his pro day, but I don't think anyone thinks he's going to run 4.9. I don't think it ultimately is going to hurt him too much.
And we will talk a little bit more about him later in terms of where we expect him to go in the draft. That's
true.
A little teaser for you. Looking forward to seeing Owa Odigizua once again.
Yeah,
I'm sure you are, Fran.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys. Owamabe.
Is he your favorite non-Ibrahim Campbell prospect?
I would say he's my favorite non-Ibrahim Campbell prospect, but
you wouldn't say that?
No, I don't think so. But
what happened?
He's up.
Just like the name.
You guys he's up.
Drift
there.
Apart?
No, I mean, look. The thing you like.
What happened? You were so close at the Senior Bowl.
The thing about Odigizua is that he wins in ways that are different from a lot of these other pass rushers. So if you're not necessarily looking for one of those smaller guys that are going to win with speed on the edge, Odighizuwa offers the opposite in terms of winning with heavy hands, and beating offensive tackles with power. He's one of those guys. So
who is then your favorite?
Who is my favorite prospect?
Non-Ibrahim Campbell division.
I don't know. I have to think about that. I'll get back to you next week on that one.
Oh,
you are the king of not answering questions.
I don't want to give
love,
you.
You love to just not go out on a limb.
I don't want to give you an answer that might not be right. I have to think it through.
But it doesn't. The answer could change from this week to next week. At one point, it was Odighizuwa.
That's a great tease for next week's show.
There you go. See that? BT knows.
We want to see how you evolve throughout the draft process.
Evolving is different than just throwing stuff against a wall. So I don't want to throw anything against the wall. I want to give you the right answer.
There is no right answer.
Oh, there's
your answer.
Right,
weak.
All right, so we'll go through. We're going to talk about Odighizuwa actually on a draft buzz. I am in a couple of seconds here, but let's go through some of the pro day results. And Fran, in particular, I want to ask you about a couple of guys, some under the radar guys. Ole Miss, Senquez Golden, cornerback.
Golson.
Apologies.
Yeah, we saw him at the Senior Bowl. Had a very, very productive season for Ole Miss. Was not really a one-year wonder, but had a huge spike in his interception production this year. Had a huge pick at the end of the game when they beat Alabama.
Former Red Sox draftee.
That's true. That's right. Former baseball player. But, shows those ball skills and, being able to track the deep ball. A little bit undersized.
He's
I think he's
really
5'9", 5'10". So,
I think he's 5'8".
Yeah, he might be right. I mean, he definitely came in shorter than people thought at the Senior Bowl. And that's going to be one of the issues. Are people going to see him as an outside corner, or is he going to be a slot guy only?
So as we transition to defensive line prospects, Eddie Goldman was noted by Daniel Jeremiah NFL Network as the best run-stopping defensive tackle in this draft class. You've had a chance to scout the D linemen.
Yeah, Eddie Goldman's a guy, you looked at last year, another defensive tackle that came out of Florida State, Timmy Jernigan. A lot of people kind of sold as a three-technique penetrator, guy that can get after the quarterback. And he wasn't really that kind of player when you watched him. He was more of a run defender. And I kind of see Goldman the same way. A lot of people thought that, he's, this quick twitch, like pass rusher that you can line up over the guard and say get after the quarterback. I think Goldman is more so a nose tackle in a 4-3, a guy that can hold up against the run, and he put on a ton of weight going up to the combine too. We got to see him at the combine, and he came in 15 to 20 pounds heavier than what he was listed, and it wasn't bad weight, but I think he's more of a nose tackle. Whether he's the best run defender, I think that's debatable. I mean, you have guys like Danny Shelton that are there. I think Joey Mboo is a very talented run defender as well, who's
Definitely. Long arms.
Yep, he's got those long arms. He plays with a good base. So, both those guys I would say are up there. But Goldman, I would say that would be his strength, is his ability to hold up at the point of attack.
He's in the mold of another former Florida State defensive tackle, a Broderick Bunkley type.
That's a good point. There you go. They just keep shooting him out. That's actually not a bad comparison. I never thought about that. But
I think and we'll get to comparisons to Eagles a little bit later in the show.
But that's what I think Goldman's best role is.
Our last draft buzz item, ESPN Steve Mensch lists his top 10 athletes in this year's draft class. So we'll start at number 10, work our way up. Number 10, a player who you might hear about later on in the show, tease, Eric Rowe. Safety.
Row your boat.
Out of Utah.
What's impressive about him is the size to go along with the athleticism. That's what makes it so impressive.
Will all 10 of these players have appeared on Bruce Feldman's freak list?
No. Eric Rowe wasn't, so there you go.
Number 9, Fran, let you say it. UCLA, defensive end.
Owamabe Odighizuwa. Owa, our good friend. That's surprising.
He's not your good friend anymore.
Good friend.
A lot of people are down on him and say that he's not a natural pass rusher. So to name him one of the 10 best athletes in the draft is... interesting.
Number 8, wide receiver out of Nebraska,
Kenny Bell.
There you go.
I think he's flying under the radar a little
bit. I'm playing this as a game against you.
There you go. He's flying under the radar a little bit. He's an intriguing deep
threat.
He was
supposed to go to the Shrine game, then he dropped out.
Great hair.
Yeah.
That's true. He's got great hair. He's a guy who's a true vertical threat. I think he's got to improve in a couple areas of his game, but shows the ability to win as a blocker on the perimeter. Has got good speed, good athlete. I mean, I'm not surprised to see that he's on this list.
The best hair, by the way, is the Oregon ball boy. I'm thinking back to the national championship game against Ohio State.
That's awful hair.
It was
tremendous
to watch.
That's not good
hair. I like Red Lightning from Florida State, personally. But
number 7, Clemson.
Vic Beasley.
Linebacker.
Stephon Anthony.
Stephon.
Yes. Stephon Anthony.
Well, he tested that way. I don't think people expected him to test like he did at the combine, but afterwards, sure, you could absolutely say that.
Okay, 1-1.
Number six, Oregon.
Arik Armstead.
Jake Fisher. Jake Fisher is a guy, obviously, that tested off the charts at the combine. A lot of people think that, you know, when you look at the different benchmarks that people need to hit, I think Josh Norris has talked about that in the past, that he was the lone lineman in this class to meet those benchmarks in terms of elite athleticism at the offensive line. Fisher's an impressive guy.
Number five, Kentucky.
Bud Dupree.
I tried to wait this time and not say the obvious name.
Number four, Bo Wolf. Wake Forest.
Oh, Kevin Johnson.
Kevin Johnson. That's interesting. And see, these are guys that you wouldn't think would be on this list. Mm-hmm. So, Kevin Johnson. All right.
Number three, the other Clemson defensive player everyone's
Vic
talking
Beasley.
About.
All right. Vic Beasley, obviously, at 245 pounds, the way that he tested was very impressive. Okay.
Number two, Georgia. Wide receiver.
Chris Clemens.
Chris Conley.
Wrong Georgia.
Chris Clemens comes back to haunt us once again.
One of the saltiest players ever in the locker room.
We talked about Chris Conley a couple weeks ago after the combine. Obviously a very explosive deep threat. Not as great laterally, so struggles breaking down a little bit on those shorter and intermediate routes, but definitely a deep threat.
Chris Clemens once pantsed C-Mac at training camp in the middle of the practice.
That was Darren Howard who pantsed me. Chris Clemens was just salty all the time.
Are you sure?
100%.
You didn't see it coming.
I think he would know.
I saw it happen.
Yeah, it was Darren Howard in the middle of the practice field at Lehigh. All right, I'll let you guys guess it for number one.
I'm going to say Byron Jones.
Fran?
Yeah, that's a good guess. I'm going to say Ronald Darby, Florida State.
Well,
terrible guess.
Bo wins.
Yeah!
There you go.
So there you go. That was like a taste of On the Clock before we get to On the Clock. So that's going to do it for our draft buzz, and we're now going to transition. You have to watch the video portion. That's all we have to say.
It's too
much. Bless you if you are unable to see this, what's going on. So we are now headed to Mr. Relevant.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
It's time for our Mr. Relevant here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, and we bring in Kevin Weidel, college football analyst for ESPN. Now, Kevin, in our Meet the Prospects series on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, we introduce fans to Trey Waynes, the quarterback out of Michigan State, and while it doesn't look like that he'll be there at number 20 for the Eagles, can you talk about him as a prospect and how he might transition to the NFL?
You see Waynes, and he's a good football player, guys, and I actually like Marcus Peters a little bit better. I think on Tate, Peters is a better football player. I think with Waynes, you're getting a better guy off the field, a guy you can trust more. And I even go look at Kevin Johnson at a Wake Forest. I think he's got better movement skills than Waynes. But you look at Waynes at 6 foot, 185 pounds. He obviously clocked in that 4.3 range. It's going to help him out. The one thing you see on tape, I see a little bit of tightness. I do. I see it at times when he gets to turn and open, quickly change direction. There's some tightness. And the technique that he's coached, you know, down there, the Pat Narduzzi coming out of Michigan State, you know, just in terms of getting your hands on players and press technique, being in position, so fundamentally sound and technically advanced already in college, you just wonder how high of a ceiling he has. Where a guy like Marcus Peters, Kevin Johnson, I think at that coaching that didn't have that type of, you know, seasoning technique-wise, I think they have a little bit higher of a ceiling. I kind of like Kevin Johnson's movement skills a little better. I think he's got the cleanest in the entire class. You know, it's interesting. I think Wayne's going to be a really good football player. I just think there's a little bit of tightness that you know, a little bit of concern. I still think he's worthy of a early second-round grade.
Kevin, we were discussing your colleague Steve Mensch, his top 10 athletes in the 2015 NFL draft class in our previous segment, and mentioned Byron Jones. And going through your Twitter timeline, you mentioned that, look, you're not surprised at how well he worked out, but the tape also matched that athleticism. Can you talk about Byron Jones and where do you think that he projects? Because there have been some mock drafts that have linked him to the Eagles, possibly at that number 20 spot.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a guy 6'1", 199 pounds that jumped through the gym. You see it on tape. He's got a lot of athletic ability. He's an explosive mover. For a guy that size, he's pretty fluid too, guys. You know, he's a guy that's explosive leaper, goes up and plays the football well. And when he catches, I expect him to run really well at his combine. I mean, at his pro day, I should say.
Kevin, one pass rusher that a lot of people have been talking about as a first-round grade, and I think he's one of the more polarizing prospects in this class, and that's Missouri pass rusher Shane Ray. Obviously, you talk about the great first step. You talk about the active hands and the variety of ways that he's able to attack offensive linemen. What are your feelings on Ray? Because some people, I think, see him as a top 15 pick. Other people, maybe a little bit lower on him as maybe a late first-round grade. How do you see Ray?
Well, I see Ray as a potential top 15 pick in this class. I do, but I have some concerns. You know, I love the way he plays the game. He's a little bit of a tweener, though, when you look at him. Just at right around 6'2", 245 pounds, 6'3". And he's a guy that, you know, you wonder where his position is going to be. He fits a 34 outside linebacker. Does he have that type of athleticism? Not a lot of speed to power when you watch him. A little bit underwhelming in that area as a pass rusher. Very active hands, quickness, to win with quickness, a great motor, instinctive, tough football player. But to me, as pass rushers, you really have to be able to win at speed to power. And if you go back and, you know, you do a little bit of a study and you go look at the top 30 pass rushers, the sack leaders this past year, tell me how many of them just win based off of pure speed. You have to have speed to power in this league to be able to keep those offensive linemen on their toes, worried about speed, worried if they're going to come at you with the power of the rusher. So to me, that's where I have a little bit of concern with him. I kind of like Dante Style a little bit better, Randy Gregory. So, you know, he's the third outside linebacker, I would say, that edge rusher I would in my area, in my rankings. And I think he's worthy of a 10 to 20 grade in this class. To me, I would have a late first-round grade on him.
Hey, Kevin, in terms of just generally the rest of the class, who are some players who you may be higher on than sort of the group think in the rest of people looking at the draft?
Well, I mean, there's a couple guys. I'll tell you one guy that I've really come around on, and it's honestly turned into one of my favorite players in the draft. He was honestly one of my most overrated players when he's playing tackle, and that's Sam Irving. So he's a left tackle, playing left tackle. I thought he was a little bit overrated. He bumps into offensive center at the Miami game, and he makes a smooth transition, guys. At 6'5", 6'6", 313 pounds, he's got abnormal size. For an offensive center, he's got strong inline power. He's smart. He's agile. And he's a guy I think that can step in right away and really anchor the interior of an offensive line. I think he's got Pro Bowl potential at center. I think he's one, you know, if you're a team late in the first and, you know, you need some help on the interior offensive line, there's a couple guys on the board you were hoping on the board, they're off the board, I think he's a safe pick. You take him, you plug him in, I think you got a starting center being with the potential to fill in at all five positions if you get in an emergency. I think Cam Irving turned into one of my favorite players in this class. I think he's one of the safer prospects in this class.
I'd wanted to ask you specifically about Cam Irving because you had mentioned on Twitter that you felt he was one of the safest prospects in this year's draft class. Do you think that he could potentially play guard? And I'm asking because of the fact that the Eagles released Todd Harrimans, who has moved on and signed with the Colts, and that's a potential option where the Eagles would have to fill. And I know that might be high for the Eagles to take a guard there, but still it's a potential position in need, at least at this point, where the roster stands. So do you think that he'd be able to transition to guard as well as he made that move from guard to center at the college ranks?
I think he can play all five positions. I do. I think he's one of the more versatile linemen in this class. You know, you're talking about a guy that made a transition from tackle to center, and you think about center and the calls you got to make, and it's probably the most complicated position in the entire offensive line. For him to make that smooth of a transition, really impressive. It doesn't, you know, and I don't see why he wouldn't be able to play at a guard position. You know, I had a chance to talk with Rick Trickett before the ACC championship game in here in Charlotte, just asking about Cam Irving and asking about the transition. He said he was really impressed with how effortless and smooth it was for him in terms of not only physically but mentally, how sharp he was right off the bat. So, you know, Trickett spoke really well of him in terms of ability to learn, retain information, apply it on the field. So, to me, I think he's a guy that's where his value is. You know, he's a guy that can play center, but he's got that versatility to help you out at all five positions if need be. So that's why I like Cam Irving so much, especially at the interior offensive line.
So, Kevin, as a former college quarterback yourself and a lot of discussion in Philadelphia about the quarterback position, I don't want to know so much about the top guys, Winston and Mariota, because they've been discussed very thoroughly. Who are some of the under-the-radar prospects, some of the next-tier guys who have caught your eye in the draft process?
Wow, you know, it's really a thin class, and I kind of like Garrett Grayson when you watch him on tape. You know, he's got some presence to him in the pocket. There's some things I like. He gets through progressions. He'll work through progressions. He throws with some anticipation, some timing. You know, doesn't have the greatest physical skill set in terms of, you know, stretching the ball down the field. You know, ball can hang in the air at times. You see it on tape. I'll tell you another guy that I was kind of impressed at the NFLPA game, you know, and he's a late round free agent type player that I won't be surprised if he makes a roster. Jameel Showers out of UTEP. And, you know, he's a guy that was at the NFLPA game to watch and just has a natural feel for the position. I think he throws the ball well. It comes clean off his hands. You know, we watch him in practice. We watch him during the game. And he's a guy that's had a natural feel in terms of getting through progression, understanding situational football, being smart, throwing the ball away. Has that type of versatility, that athleticism. When the play breaks down, he can use his legs to get outside the pocket, extend plays, use his feet to move the chains if need be. I think he's a smart football player. I think there's a lot to work with him. I think he's a great seventh-round free agent. Bring him in, try to develop him. And you know what, guys? I wouldn't be surprised if one day he turns into an adequate backup in the league.
I like that just because you get to hear a different name that's not thrown around a lot.
Yeah, no question. And then, Kevin, just staying in the backfield, with LeSean McCoy leaving the Eagles, obviously in the trade for Kiko Alonso, the Eagles like to, you know, employ a zone running attack. Do you see any of these one cut slasher types being a good fit? You know, you talk about a guy from Boise State, Jay Ajayi. Are there any other guys in that mold that you think would fit?
Yeah, CJ Yeldon's another guy I think is really good in the zone read team. When you look at him, you know, he's a guy that's not going to have a tremendous amount of speed, but one thing he does have, balance, lateral quickness. He's got tremendous vision and patience. He understands his blocks. He understands the flow of the defense and has a natural feel for that vertical cut against the flow of the defense. So, to me, Yeldon's another bigger back, you know, a little bit upright running style, but he's got better quickness than I think people anticipate. You know, not going to be able to break those big runs, but he's going to grind out some yards, make the proper reads in that zone read system and pick up the yards necessary. And I think he's another guy that could be a fit with the Eagles.
Kevin Weidel, college football analyst for ESPN. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, folks, it's time for our Pick 6 segment here, and we're going to go a little bit into looking at the current Eagles roster and comparing it to some of the draft prospects in this year's class. So we're going to pick 6 players. And
pick 6.
Them.
You see how that works? That's
pick 6.
Yeah.
So six only 6 guys.
Yes. If you go to previous episodes, Fran has had, you know, tendency to ramble on.
Yeah, he tries to pick 30 or so.
You know, we won't let him do it this time.
I try to hold it to 20.
Thank you. We appreciate it. So 6, so we'll have 18 guys total. So players who are similar to players on the current Eagles roster. So I'm going to kick things off here.
Kick it off.
Let's hear it.
And I'm going to go with a player who could be the top defensive player selected in this year's draft class, Leonard Williams from USC. It's a player whom Fran or Bo and I agreed upon, actually, when we were mapping out our 6 picks. Compare him to
Wade Kelly Ekipi.
Not quite. No. Fletcher Cox.
Nice.
Scheme versatility. Both young. Both players who impacted their college teams. Cox at Mississippi State from an early age. Could come in and, you know, I think make an instant impact in the NFL. So I went with Leonard Williams and Fletcher Cox.
I did like this one a lot. I almost took it as well. They're built very similarly. Leonard Williams is 6'5", 302. Fletcher Cox coming out was 6'4", 298. So very similar. Fletcher was a little bit quicker in terms of his testing. Leonard Williams was a little bit more explosive in the vertical jump and broad jump. But their numbers are pretty similar. Leonard Williams was just a little bit more productive sacks-wise.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it was a little more projection with Fletcher Cox, but he was also a little bit younger. So I like this one. I think they're similar players.
And it's interesting looking at the two. I actually, now that you guys bring it up, he actually kind of reminds me a little bit more body type wise to Sed Thornton. In terms of the length and like he's a little bit leaner. You know, the girth is a little bit different. So that's interesting. All right, I like that.
Okay, so number two, I'm going to go inside linebacker Stephon Anthony of Clemson and D'Amico Ryans. When you look at size, both downhill players. Coming from a leadership standpoint, could impact from that standpoint as well. Everyone knows how D'Amico is Mufasa, so I went with those two there.
Okay.
Yeah,
also,
I like that.
I don't have any disagreements.
And also, both could end up being second-round picks when all said and done.
I like that.
That's good.
So, next I'm going to go tight end. Ben Koyak, Notre Dame, with our own Brent Celek.
Okay.
Interesting. Same body type, I think.
Similar body type.
Yeah.
Koyak, noted blocker, not as quite as developed as a pass catcher. We all know how Celek is arguably the best all-around tight end in the game. So that's why I went with the two there.
I like that.
Next, go defensive backfield. Jalen Collins. Some people have him mocked to the Eagles at number 20. Cornerback. Safety, Malcolm Jenkins. You go from a size and length athleticism standpoint. Collins, not a ton of college experience from a starting perspective. No one's saying that he's a guy who might transition to safety, but Jenkins was a first-round pick in 2009 as a cornerback. So that's why I went with that there.
I think I know exactly how you got there because I looked at the similar thing.
You went to
mock draftable, went to Malcolm Jenkins, and changed it to cornerback.
That's exactly. Yeah. Of course. Well, because I said, because you go on there, and I'm like, well, remember, Jenkins was a cornerback when he was drafted, so.
It's interesting. All right.
Running back, Miami's Duke Johnson, Kenyon Barner.
Interesting.
Digging deep into the well.
You're trying to run the gamut of players on the roster, so similar size, athletic, versatile.
He's a rich man's Kenyon Barner, right?
That's right.
Yes. I think we would agree on that point. Last one here, Cam Worthy. Big framed wide receiver from East Carolina to Riley Cooper. Cam Worthy had a couple big time games, some stat popping games that will just go off the charts, similar to how Riley Cooper has played at times throughout his career. Someone who can go down, he can catch the deep ball. Big frame can shield smaller receivers. Similar playing style. So that's why I went with
that. I will admit that I know absolutely nothing about Cam Worthy.
I haven't watched a snap of Cam Worthy where I focused on him. So
I'm going to
take
your
word on
Hardy
that
instead.
One. Justin Hardy's a good player.
Okay.
You want to go?
That was not bad. You want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Let's see. Where should I start? I'll start at tight end also.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going with the other Eagles tight end, Zach Ertz, and I'm comparing him to Clive Walford. Clive is 6'4", 251. Ertz was 6'5", 249. Very similar. Ertz was a little bit quicker testing-wise, while Walford was better in the jumping numbers and stuff like that. But similar, they were both about 13, 14 yards per catch. They both win in the same ways. I think Clive's probably a little bit more advanced as a blocker right now than Ertz was. Ertz was probably a little bit better of a receiver.
I like that. Yeah, okay. That's a fair assessment.
Okay. All right. Next, I will go to linebacker, a guy we saw at the I guess both the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl, Amarlo Herrera from Georgia, Casey Matthews.
Oh, this has got to be an athletic footprint.
It's actually not so much athletic. They're very similar build. Both 6'1", 244, 6'1", 245. Casey Matthews was a little bit faster in the 40. He didn't do all the testing drills, so there wasn't comparisons. But they're both similar, more coverage-based linebackers than downhill thumpers, probably expected to be special teams players for the first few years at the next level. I think that's the comparison for Amarlo Herrera.
Okay.
I like that. All right.
Not bad. All right, this one I think is the most accurate comparison. I think these two players are very similar. You've got a receiver who is 5'10", 209 versus 5'11", 206. Both of them, a little bit running back backgrounds. Both very, very good in terms of yards after catch. Physical runners after the catch. Both productive in spread offenses. Both about 15, 16 yards per catch. Very productive. Both had 1,000-yard seasons. Antoine Goodley and Josh Huff.
Interesting. I like that. I like that comparison.
We both had it, too.
Did you guys both have it?
That's one of the ones we originally both had.
I like that. I was trying to think of one for Huff, and I couldn't come up with one off the top of my head.
I think that is maybe the most clear comparison.
Okay.
All right. Next up. This is a tough one because this Eagles player is the most athletic player at his position. But this player tested pretty well. He's probably going to play on the inside as well. Jason Kelce and Ali Marpet,
your boy,
my friend from Hobart. They're similarly built. Marpet's a little bit heavier, a little bit bigger, not quite as quick as Kelce was, but their measurements are very similar. Their three cones are very similar. Kelce just a little bit quicker, Marpet a little bit stronger.
I just had such a tough time going with your Kelce or Jason Peters just because
Lane
Johnson.
They're very unique.
Yeah.
Marpet is it's a tough one, but he profiles similarly.
I was trying to find an offensive line. That was the struggle I had.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with Chris. because I have Malcolm Jenkins, but I have him with Eric Rowe, who is versatile enough to play both cornerback and safety. They're both 6'1", 205, 6'1", 204. Malcolm Jenkins has a little bit longer arms. Eric Rowe was a little bit faster in the 40, but Malcolm Jenkins was a little bit quicker. 10-yard dash was ahead of Eric Rowe's. Rowe was a little bit quicker in the 20-yard shuttle. Jenkins is a little bit quicker in the three cone. But in terms of players, I think they're pretty similar. And obviously the versatility to play both is the thing there, with besides from their exact same body type.
It's fascinating that we had the same Eagles player and came up with a different
Who do you think is a better comparison, Fran?
Well, I've got one for Malcolm Jenkins.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to say mine.
All three, okay. All right, my last one. I'm pretty proud of this one. Cody Fajardo, G.J. Kinney.
Oh, there you go. All right, nice. Interesting.
They're both very similarly sized. Cody Fajardo is a little bit smaller. They both ran well. Cody Fajardo ran a little bit better than G.J. Kinney did in his pro day, but they're both sort of run-first, run-around quarterbacks. They both were productive rushers. They also, you know, were productive passers in college, 65% completion, about 7-8 yards per attempt. But I think Cody Fajardo is looking for probably about the same career arc as G.J. Kinney.
I thought about trying to find a G.J. Kinney one. I didn't go that deep into the well.
That didn't occur to me once. So kudos to you guys.
Would you agree that that's where Fajardo's headed?
That's pretty interesting. Well, I mean, look, Tony, when we were down at the Shrine game, Tony Pauline said that a lot of teams were hoping to look at him as a wide receiver, for whatever that's worth. I don't know. But that's an interesting one. I didn't go that deep. So I'll start my six.
Well, G.J. Kinney has played everything for the Eagles.
Oh, sure, on the scout team. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, no question about it. Love G.J. All right, so my first guy, I went with a tight end. I'll kick it off in the tight end spot, just like you did, Bo. I went with Zach Ertz as well, but I went with a guy that really, when I watched him as a sophomore, he really reminded me of Ertz, just in the way that he moved, and he's a very similar body type. That's Tyler Kroft out of Rutgers, 6'6", 245 pounds. He wore the number 86 at Rutgers, so you know there's the similarities there. But
yeah,
just overall, a big kid, has the speed to get down the seam, still improving as a blocker, but has the athleticism, has the ball skills there to maybe develop into a future starter. So Tyler Kroft is Zach Ertz. And a lot of these guys were, I didn't necessarily go off of like the combine numbers. It was more so like when I watched them, if they reminded me of a guy when you know, and how they moved. My second guy that I've got, Ifo Ekpre-Olumu from Oregon, obviously was a big-time player there for the Ducks, played under Chip Kelly, 5'9", 192 pounds. I kind of see him as a Brandon Boykin-type player. There we go. Coming out of Georgia, both guys showed the ability to play inside, play outside, play man coverage and zone coverage, have really good ball skills, very good athletically, show the ability to come down and tackle you. I kind of see those two guys in similar veins. I think Boykin's a little bit bigger, but very similar frames.
Both were injured during the draft process, too. So.
That's a good point. Exactly.
I thought about that one.
Neither could work out at the combine, so I like that one. My third guy, Jalen Strong out of Arizona State, kind of reminds me, and this is more so in a situational thing. A lot of the questions that people had with Jordan Matthews coming out of Vanderbilt was, is he going to be able to separate? But he's able to go up and he's going to be able to make those contested catches. Jalen Strong has those same issues where you don't know if he's going to be able to separate. How athletic is he? He ended up running in the 4.4s. I think he ran 4.44 at the combine. But he's probably the best contested catch guy in this draft class when you watch him game in and game out. Jalen Strong at 6'2", 197 to Jordan Matthews, I think is pretty similar.
Interesting.
Staying on the offensive side of the ball, Reese Dismukes from Auburn. Saw him at the Senior Bowl.
That's why we love Fran, because you know he'll find the gems.
Well, 6'2", 296 pounds.
This is going to be like my Kenny, I think.
Well, going into the season, Dismukes was kind of thought of as one of the best interior linemen in the draft, coming from Auburn. It's that run-oriented offense. Has good initial quickness, comes off the ball pretty well. He's got decent feet and his ability to move laterally, kind of plays with an edge. But overall, he's just he's an average athlete, not a great athlete, doesn't get a ton of movement off the ball. So I think he's more of a late-round pick than the early-round pick some people thought he was a year ago at this time. He reminded me, and this is, again, this is from when I watched him back in the fall, it kind of reminded me of Julian Vanderbilt. And that's kind of...
I figure that's where you're going.
Yeah, that's who he kind of reminded me of in Vanderbilt coming out of Iowa.
Vanderbilt was a fifth-round pick. Kelsey was a sixth-round pick, so...
That's right. So you've got that going for you.
Which is nice.
Yeah. So now the Malcolm Jenkins comparison.
All right. Do we have a drum roll?
We don't need no drum roll needed. But no? Okay. This is a guy that when he plays safety. He didn't play safety. Obviously Malcolm Jenkins didn't play safety in college. He played corner. But Curtis Drummond is the guy from Michigan State. Played safety. 6 foot, 208 pounds. He didn't test overly well at the combine, which I think will have some people raising their eyebrows. But really instinctive player. I thought he played faster than he timed. Just a decent athlete, can play man, can play zone, did a number of different things for Michigan State on that defense, getting better as a tackler, and I think that was one of the knocks on Malcolm Jenkins, both in college and coming from New Orleans, and he's proven, obviously, to be a very good player for the Eagles in this defense. So Curtis Drummond compared with Eric Rowe and who was the Jalen Collins?
Jalen Collins.
So there you go. Maybe you mix the three together. And it's,
I'm taking mine.
Well, of
obviously.
Course. All three of us are going to take Rowe.
We should get Malcolm.
Well, there you go.
And see what he thinks.
That's a valid point. All right, so I'm going to close it out. A guy that we talked about, a rich man's Duke John, or rich man's Kenyon Barner being Duke Johnson. I think a poor man's Fletcher Cox is Marcus Hardison from Arizona State. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, 6'3", 307 pounds, really big frame, athletic kid that moves really well. I think he's intriguing because of his movement skills. But he's got to get stronger. He's got to get tougher. I think he's a high upside guy that it will end up going probably in the on day three, sometime in those mid to late rounds. But Hardison's an intriguing guy.
So speaking of Marcus Hardison,
yes,
that's right.
Time for our first unofficial visit. And Bo, you had a chance to catch up with Marcus at the Senior Bowl.
We did. Let's hear that interview now.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we are here with Marcus Hardison, Arizona State defensive lineman. And Marcus, tell us, for Eagles fans who may not know, what's the scouting report on you? What do you do well, and where do you need to work on?
I feel like I'm a good pass rusher. You know, I can get to the quarterback. But the things I do need to work on is just, run fitting, getting more firm with my block. So that's definitely an improving area.
One of the things we hear so much for defensive linemen is versatility. And I know you did a lot of that at Arizona State, moving all over the line, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. I didn't play 5-tech, 7-tech, 3-tech, 0-tech. I didn't play it everywhere on the line. So, I mean, I think that classifies very, versatile player. So
is there one place where you feel most comfortable?
Love the 5-tech, but the 3-tech is for me. I like the 3-tech.
So, you said that, you love getting after the quarterback. Mm-hmm. When you dream at night about making a big play, is it a sack or is it like a stop on fourth down?
It is a sack, strip, pick it up, take it to the house.
Yeah, I like that. And do you have a celebration plan?
The celebration comes in the moment, To be honest with you, I try to plan out my celebrations throughout the week, but it never works out when it happens, it just happens in the moment.
You always forget about it at the mm-hmm. time, right?
Yeah.
We like to ask guys, best player you played against this season, who would you say?
I have to say Pete from Stanford.
Okay, fair enough. And in terms of NFL comparisons, you're going to hear them throughout the draft process. Is there anybody in the NFL you think you have a similar game to?
Hold on. I was about to say the name. The name just went out of my head. But I have to say Julius Peppers.
Okay.
Julius Peppers.
All right. That's a pretty good one. Well, Marcus, best of luck, and maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia one day.
Definitely.
On the clock.
All right, fellas. Time for on the clock once again. And we're going back to an old friend, it's one that I don't really love, to be honest. I don't think it gives as good a picture, but we're going back to over-under.
Okay.
All right. I like the over-under.
I had a feeling that's where you're going when you said
I don't love over-unders. They're just okay. All right. We're going to start with
Now that you've given that such a ringing endorsement, everyone will keep listening now.
Yeah.
Feel free to chime in on Twitter and tell us what you prefer for on the clock. I like the would you rathers. I like when we mix in a new game every now and then. The over-unders are, I don't know. Well, we'll see. They're too binary,
The over-unders are good because you can go back to them later and point to them and say, you were right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We're going to start with the man that everybody is always talking about, Marcus Mariota.
Okay.
Quarterback from Oregon, in case you didn't know.
Did he win the Heisman Trophy?
I believe he did.
Okay.
Played for Chip Kelly.
Wow, really?
Over-under, Marcus Mariota is taking third overall.
I'm going to take...
What's over would be?
Over would be
over
higher
is
than three.
He's taken after third overall. He's taken fifth overall.
Okay.
Under is he's taken in the first two picks, or he could push. I decided not to go with any halves today.
Okay.
All right. It's that type of mood.
In case you want to push.
I'm going to take the under. as in he will get drafted higher than three.
I'll agree when you look at the quarterback class to begin with.
Right.
And it's pretty much two guys that people think that are going to be the quarterbacks. Mariota, I think, is a guy who when he interviews, obviously the tape is going to show that he was outstanding in the Oregon system, and there's a question about how that'll project to the NFL. I think when you combine if you separate the physical tools of how he performed with the character player that he is, I think it's going to be too tempting for someone to move up. And everyone's going to obviously think that we're talking the Eagles here, but it could be. There are plenty of other quarterback need teams.
Sure.
So I will take the under as well.
I think I agree. I think he will go second overall. All right. Georgia running back Todd Gurley, over under 26th overall.
Ooh.
I feel like I'm leaning toward the under in this case, because if he goes...
Meaning he'll be taken before 26?
Before 26, correct. Okay. If you go squarely on talent, most people will have you believe that he is one of the five, if not 10, best players, period, in this draft class. And I understand the, quote-unquote, you know, devaluation of the running back position, but I think to me it's how good a player do we have? People will say, well, there hasn't been a running back taken in the first round the last couple of drafts. Has there been one worthy of that status? Now, you could say there are a lot of free agent running backs on the market now.
Right.
That's going to bleed into the draft where it's a pretty good running back class. But I feel like if it's a team that needs a franchise guy, at ACL injuries, you know, not everyone obviously is going to be the same, but it seems like players are coming back from them more frequently, I feel like that he'll get selected before 26.
I mean, if you're just looking at the draft as it stands right now.
Who is 26?
26 is Baltimore.
Okay.
So they theoretically could take him.
And 27 is Dallas?
27 is Dallas. But okay. leading up to 26, you've got Carolina at 25, which in theory could take a running back. 24 is Arizona. 23 is Detroit. So, I mean, I could see all three of those teams drafting a back in the first round. San Diego is at 17, and that seems to be one of the popular ones. If you're going to see one of those running backs go in the top 20, I think the Chargers is the popular choice. Ryan Matthews is a free agent.
They were reportedly signing Orlando Franklin.
Right. So
at guard.
Yep. I mean, that would be an interesting one. So that being said, I think I'm going to take the over.
I think I agree.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the over. I think Todd Gurley, if you're just ranking guys like how they compare to the rest of the players in the draft, I think he's a top 10 player for sure. You know, arguably a top 5 talent in the draft, but you know, just the running back position in general, I would be surprised, and you could convince me otherwise, I would be surprised if he went before that.
I think as you touched on, Chris, because of the injury and because of how deep this running back class is, I think he'll last a little bit longer. But he is that talented. I could certainly see somebody falling in love. All right. Eric Kendricks, over under 46th overall. Will he beat his brother?
That's a good spot, too.
That is a good spot for him. I'm going to take the under. I think if you compare him with some of the other linebackers in this group, I think he's easily one of the top two, easily top three linebackers in this class. If you're talking about guys that play off the ball. I think Kendricks falls in the top 45.
So that would be, first half of the second round.
Yeah,
at worst.
Roughly. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. I will take the under as well.
Me too.
One of our, was it over? I think we did an over under at the combine, Fran, of inside linebackers to go in the first round.
Yep.
And he's a fringe guy. He's one of the guys who's right on the bubble there. So I think he would be one of the first picks off the board in the second round.
I think the linebacker group in general is like a few guys at the top that are fringe first rounders, but you would almost say, that guy will definitely be there before, or be gone before the end of the halfway point around two.
I think Kendricks, Perryman, Stephon Anthony, and maybe Benardrick McKinney, those four guys are probably all going somewhere from 28 to 50.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yep, for sure.
So
I would agree.
All right, now I'm focusing on each of our pet projects. I'm going to start with Chris.
Mm. Ooh, pet
project. Eli Harold, over under, I'm going to say 50th overall.
Mm. So, bogo to me, is there a player who you have a man crush on.
Because I know I've got plenty, and I know Fran's got plenty. I didn't know who.
So I want Eli Harrell, the edge rusher from Virginia.
Your favorite interview from the combine.
Yes. Athletically gifted.
Yep.
It's a strong edge rusher class.
It is Eli Harrell, right?
Yes.
It is
not Harold
Eli.
Okay. Correct.
I like how you switched it up, though, and you asked the question without saying the answer.
Yes.
That was interesting.
I think everybody knows where I'm going.
Exactly. Yeah. I will take a slight over, I think. I think there's just a glut
of
good edge rushers. Could there be a chance that there's a run that might cause a team to panic? Possibly, but I will say in my gut he's probably – I think I would take the over on that.
I would lean the over as well. I think there's too many guys, and I don't know that he – and I want to do more work on Harrell, but I don't know that he stood out on tape enough to be warranted in that discussion, in the top – in that top part of the draft. So we'll see. And he tested very, very well at the combine. So,
okay. All right. Fran's kickball protege.
Oh, nice.
Ibrahim Campbell, the Northwestern safety, over under the sixth safety selected.
Ooh. See, this is a tough one because safety is such like a
it's such a niche thing, dependent on what exactly you're looking for.
Yeah. Yep, no question. So
someone could see him as their number two safety. Someone could see him as
number
11.
Yeah, right. Exactly. At number six, I'm going to go with my guy. I'm going to give him credit. I'm going to take the under. One of the best tackling defensive backs in the draft.
I think he's going to go be like the fifth safety selected. I might. You know what? Just because we haven't done one yet, I'm going to push. I'm going six.
Oh, you're
going
to push. All right.
I'm gonna call it. I get more of a payout for that, obviously.
Obviously, if this were to be a real thing,
right?
I'll go under.
Under
as well.
Oh, there you go. Yes. All right. Some love for Ibrahim.
Because I think he's a player who maybe wasn't going to stand out in terms of testing, but when you look at the tape, is going to be a guy who, if you do your diligence and say we're going to go by what he put on tape in the fall, that should allow him to be selected before.
And boy, did Fran prep him for the interviews.
Oh, he was ready. If he knew the proper kickball strategy. I mean, if that came up in the interviews, he was prepared.
All right, last one.
That's a discussion for
another
time.
One of my favorites. Kansas State offensive lineman B.J. Finney from the Shrine Game. Over under the 10th pick of the 6th round.
The 10th pick of the 6th round. Oof. I'm going to take the over. Sorry. I'm going to take the over.
All right. Haters going to hate. More motivation.
I'm going to throw the under.
Give him love. You're going to push?
I'll give him a little love.
I'm going with the under.
If you took the push, he's picking the sixth round.
BJ's Finney to be a fifth round pick.
We should do an over-under on how many times you have said BJ Finney so far this spring. Between the Shrine Game practices, after the Shrine Game.
Ooh.
While recording, during
the podcast. During the day.
Sometimes I just
countless.
Walk around. Sometimes I just walk around. BJ Finney, BJ Finney, Xavier Williams, BJ Finney. That's after a couple cups of coffee in the morning.
I would say that over-under, just in terms of how many mentions you've had on the podcast, I'm going to set that at 47.5.
Way over.
That's one episode.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
BJ Finney.
Well, speaking of, you have another
What an amazing tie-in this is, because what are the odds? These kinds of coincidences happen all the time on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, and it's kismet. It just happens. But who knew we happened to catch up with BJ Finney at the Shrine Game, and it's going to be played right now.
BJ Finney.
The unofficial visit.
Well, we're here with BJ Finney, one of the more impressive linemen of the week here at the East-West Shrine Game out of Kansas State. What has the week been like for you?
I've been told it's been a good week. Teammates, we've had a lot of fun. We've put in a lot of hard work. Coach Mudd's a great coach. Expects a lot from us and, has some unique styles, and trying to adapt those has been interesting and fun. So it's been a good week.
So we've got some experience with Howard Mudd. He coached for the Eagles for a couple of years. You got any good stories for us?
Well, we adopted the excuse number system in film. So he's like, hey, what happened here? And instead of telling him why, we just tell him a number because he knows why. And so those are probably the extent of the laughing and what's going on. But it's been a great experience. I like Coach Mudd.
So for fans who aren't familiar with you necessarily, give us the scouting report. What do you bring to the table and what are some things you need to work on?
Well, things I need to work on is I tend to get a little bit high. I tend to quit moving my feet when I get locked up on somebody, so I get to keep moving my feet. I got to quit being a muscle man. I got to be more athletic and just kind of move them where they go. This is all what Coach Mudd's telling me. So, and then when I get out of guard, get my head out of pass blocks and his style of blocking. So you attack him, and then I got to get my head out faster. So that's what he's been telling me. He also tells me that I'm strong, that I'm quick, I have good athleticism, and I attack. I play angry. I'm feisty. That's what he tells me. So, Coach Mutt saying those things, that's all I'm going
to
say.
How much of a mindset thing is that to play angry, you know, especially going out to the second level, that Cersei and Detroit stuff? How much of that is really mental?
A lot of it is. You know, you got to keep your body in check. You got to feel great in order to have that mindset. And then you come out and you have a chip on your shoulder, you play that way. That's just something that I've always wanted to do. I want to be the best. I want to play the best. And in order to do that, you have to execute and you have to play to be the best.
And how about the athleticism part of it? For Eagles fans, they'll want to know, you know, can you get to that second level? Do you have the requisite athleticism to be in that kind of offense, you think?
Well, I hold my own. I got to do a good job of getting my technique over there, and that gives me a shot. That gives me the opportunity, and that's all I've ever asked for is just give me an opportunity. So.
And in terms of versatility, center, guard, you feel comfortable at both?
Absolutely. I started my first game at Kansas State at right guard, got moved to center at halftime. I started all 50 or, you know, all 51 games, the remainder of those, and played right tackle my second half of my last game at Kansas State. So being able to move around and be versatile is a huge thing, and I'm capable of doing that.
Do you have any offensive linemen in the league who you look at as similar players or who you hope to be like?
Honestly, Coach Mudd keeps referring to me as Ryan Lilja. So okay. That's a great compliment, I think. He had 10-plus years in the NFL, so why not try and mold my game after him?
All right, last question real quick. Who's the best player you played this season?
Chucky Hunter from TCU as far as being a senior, and his counterpart at nose guard, Davion Pearson at TCU. Those guys come off the ball, they play hard, and they just don't stop. They have great motors.
All right, well, BJ, best of luck throughout the draft process. Maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia one day.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, our final segment of the show, the draft mailbag. And what's great is free agency is finally upon us. The draft is inching closer and closer. We're almost at the 50-day mark. Is you put out the tweet saying, send us your questions, you're getting more and more replies. So some very interesting questions.
That's also just because the popularity of the show is skyrocketing.
Oh, of course.
Most popular podcast on PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
It's soared.
First question here comes from Her Royal Dopeness on Twitter. Wants to know, big picture, what is going on? Looking at all the moves that have taken place.
I don't know.
It's simply a reaction to all the reports. I mean, the free agency rumor mill was insane over the weekend. So
sure was.
It's just big picture to me. It's really Chip Kelly putting his stamp on this football team, and we're learning more and more about what he prioritizes, what he values in a football team. You know, he's not going to have, you know, a certain position where he's going to spend huge amounts of money just for the sake of it. You know, he thinks he can get more efficiency. He said in the past he wishes he could pay everyone a lot of money, but you can't. You have a salary cap. So I think that's pretty much the biggest thing is we're learning, as this is going to be the third season with the Eagles under Chip Kelly, we're learning more and more about, and I think he's learning also more and more about what it takes to build a team, and he's getting to do so. Now that it's, you know, it's his stamp on everything, he's putting this team, this franchise, fully in his vision. Okay, so we launched on Monday our Meet the Prospect series, and we kick things off as we ask fans who they want to see. Mariota was the overwhelming choice.
Sure.
So we profiled him, and now at Arodriguez142 on Twitter wants to know, simply, are we drafting him? That's a big question everyone wants to know. Is Chip Kelly trying to set the team up in a way that he can make a maneuver to get up there? And I don't know. We don't know at this point what he's trying to do in terms of the quarterback situation.
Right.
You know, it could be a situation where maybe he would love to have him. He speaks very fondly of him, you know, was gushing over him back in December, right before Mariota won the Heisman, lavished him with praise on that ESPN set, you know, before the national championship game. But maybe the cost is going to be too high at the end of the day. And maybe he's looking at some of the other quarterbacks in the draft and thinking, you know, I can build the rest of the team and still work with this quarterback.
And not to mention, obviously, having Nick Foles on the roster, bringing Mark Sanchez back. I mean, there's guys here already that have shown the ability to win games. I mean, they've won 20 games over the last 2 years. I think that, look, I mean, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun few weeks as we continue to talk about it.
So that's what the speculation is going to be.
But we talked about it. We said it earlier, yeah. Earlier in the show. There are lots of other QB needy teams that would also like Marcus Mariota. So it's not like it's just the Eagles' decision. There's lots of other factors here at play.
Okay.
I also don't know the answer to that question.
Yes.
So I'm not the one to ask.
Our last item, it's not a question, actually. It comes from at MFGDog on Twitter. And I honestly had to text you guys when I first saw the picture. It's a picture of Murphy Beds.
Murphy Beds for sale.
Yes. So you guys can...
It's a great tweet.
And it's absolutely an all-timer.
And the best part of the tweet is the hashtag EaglesBeakley, of
course.
It's debatable.
Beakley Weekly.
When I saw it, it just brought a smile to my face. The Grand Plaza Hotel.
I saw it and I instantly was like, I'm definitely missing something on this one. So this is the part.
It just means you weren't listening to the first few episodes of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
From the hotel where I sat on the Murphy bed and we did the podcast from our room.
I'd like for us to draft or sign a player with the last name Murphy.
Will Murphy.
We have one on the roster.
One on the roster. Wow. I was actually thinking of trying to find a wide receiver to compare to Will Murphy. Didn't even occur to me.
Did you try or? No, I didn't.
No, I got one with Kenny instead.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Will Murphy bet. That makes me want him to stay even longer on the
there
roster.
There you go.
Murphy will outlast us all.
Well, there's no question that was an all-time tweet, though. So, well done there.
How about Caron Pratt? Will Murphy?
Will Murphy will outlast us all.
So, on that note, I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. For Bo Wolf and Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back once again next week as we look at what the Eagles have accomplished to that point in free agency and look ahead to the 2015 NFL Draft.